This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Mr. Canty, Rick has a bit of a power issue, as do many, many, many people in the tri-state area today. So it is just me and you, and, you know, Rick, I'll tell you what. I feel for everybody who is dealing with this right now after that brutal storm yesterday. I am very fortunate to have not lost power. And, you know, so many people are without it still this morning. And I'm hopeful that this, you know, it gets taken care of here relatively quickly, because it got ugly yesterday pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, this is the last thing that we need in the tri-state area. We had to deal with the pandemic, and now you want to put on top of that dealing with a hurricane. It just feels like 2020 is the year that'll never end, that'll never quit. So, we send thoughts and prayers out to everybody that's affected. We hope that everybody's doing their best to try to stay safe as everybody tries to get back on their feet. But, 2020 is just a rough year, man. I don't want to say it can't get any worse, because you just never know what's around the corner. You have no idea.
She is not letting up one bit. Yeah, no. Absolutely hammering us at every turn.
Kind of like the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, well, yeah. Ironically, yeah, because that's their name and that's how they played. And the Rangers are now headed home. And it was a very quick trip to Toronto to turn around and get swept like that. And, Chris, look, I'm watching the game and I'm encouraged by how they're playing in the first period, and they come out and score within seconds to start the second period, and then they gave it right back. And to me, that's where it ended. I hate to put it that way, but you have a younger team that clearly was one that was affected emotionally at every negative turn. One that was not able to put what happened just now in a negative way behind them and recover from it. It's almost like, you know, just being such a young team that you ride the highs so high and you ride the lows so low, and the middle ground is nowhere to be found. And as a result, you end up giving up a goal yesterday to tie the game up within, 2 to 3 minutes of taking the lead, and you're feeling good. And Rick had talked about yesterday the importance of getting that first goal, but when you give away the mentality behind that so quickly, when you give away that positive feeling, and it's just such a quick thought of here we go again. I hate to put it this way, but I absolutely thought the series was over once that game tied up.
No, you're right about that. And here's the thing. Before we even get to breaking down the game, I feel like as a Rangers fan, I need to blame you for this.
Please, by all means.
No. You should have prepared us all for this, right? Because Dave Rothenberg usually gives the weather report. And when you saw that a hurricane was in the forecast for the tri-state and the Rangers were playing Carolina, we should have known that was going to spell trouble. We should have known. Include that in the updates as the week went on, we weren't prepared for this.
I should have shoehorned it in, even though we're skipping the observations with shorter shows this week. That's on me.
Yeah, that's on you. I want to put it on you. I am. I absolutely did not expect the Rangers to get swept in this. Look, I know Carolina was a good team coming into this, but the Rangers did beat them 4 times in the regular season. They swept them in the regular season, so you thought they would at least be competitive. You thought that they could at least get this to a Game 4. But the fact that Carolina came into this thing with the overall intensity that they did, I just think they came out with a point to prove. And they were the team that had – you know, vastly more playoff experience. You know, the Carolina Hurricanes went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, whereas the Rangers had 11 guys that dressed yesterday that had never had postseason game experience at all. So, I mean, you realize that you were going to be at a deficit in that regard. And when you start talking about how important momentum is in professional team sports, especially once you get to the postseason, it's no wonder that when Carolina was able to tie it up yesterday, you realize that was the beginning of the end of the Rangers' playoff chances. So I just, for all of the reasons that you spelled out, it was just one of those things where you wanted yesterday to be different than the first two games, but the reality was that Carolina knew that they were going to get the best punch from the Rangers. They just had to sustain that first wave. They had to survive that first wave. And once they did and they got the game into the third period, it was going to be a wrap. And that's exactly what happened. Aho took over and it was a wrap.
Look, Aho's a special player. Oh, my Lord, he's good. He is absolutely fantastic. But that aside, they were a young team that played like an exceptionally young team in this series. You know, it felt like a puppy running all over the place, not exactly sure what to do. And then when they do something wrong, they get all bummed out for a few minutes. You know, they couldn't recover from that. And to me, that's just one of those. We could talk about the playoff experience. I think that's part of it, but it's building a callus in your mind. It's building a mentality that when you take a shot, you're able to bounce back from it because you can put it in the rearview mirror so quickly. You can find yourself a way to just get away from the negativity of what just happened and try to focus on the task at hand. And I just didn't feel like they were nearly focused enough the rest of that period. They had the one flurry toward the end of the period where they had an opportunity, and then I just never felt like they had a great chance in the third period to come back and take control of that game. Now, go ahead.
No, it just it didn't feel like they were going to be able to be able to swing the momentum back in their favor, right? Mm. Like Rick talks about it a lot with the Islanders, how they have the fourth line, the energy line, and those guys can kind of flip the switch and get things back on the right track. You actually saw that in their game against the Panthers yesterday. But with the Rangers, they just don't have – they didn't have that guy. They don't have that change agent that can switch the game back into their favor. Now, you can point to their youth and inexperience as the reason as to why they don't have it. But, I mean, the guys that you were looking for it from, the guys in the top six, you know, the Kreiders of the world, the Panarins of the world, like those are the players that are going to have to be responsible for being able to swing things – back in your favor, and it just didn't happen enough throughout the course of this series, and that's why we're talking about them getting swept. And we got to give credit where credit is due. James Reimer did a great job between the pipes for the Hurricanes.
Oh, he did too.
He did a great job. I mean, he had the one save on the Panarin chance when he was at the glove side and he deflected it above the net. Like, that was unbelievable. And then there's a scrum in the second period with his bodies flying everywhere. He's stretched out across the goal, doesn't let anything in. And then I'm still trying to figure out how he saved the one on the Heidel shot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how he saved the one on the Philip Heedle shot. I have no idea how that happened. I mean, with the stick, it was just unbelievable. But, I mean, he did a great job yesterday. He did a great job. So you have to give credit to them. But, again, you're talking about a team that collectively has experience. And when you have those big moments pop up in the game, you don't see them flinch. You don't see them hesitate. They execute. And that was the difference.
I didn't get a chance to hear David Quinn post-game yesterday, so we have a little bit of him right here. Here is the Rangers head coach on what happened.
Yeah, I know our guys internally have talked about, you know, the way the series got off the first, you know, minute of the series or the first 2 minutes of the series, and maybe we thought that being overly physical was going to be the way we were going to have success instead of just playing our game. And you know, that certainly wasn't the case, but give them a lot of credit. I mean, I was, you know, after two games, you watch the tape and you're like, who is this? I mean, this isn't the team that we've had for the last 2.5, 3 months before the March 11th hit. And, you know, one of the things that I thought happened tonight, I thought, you know, for two periods, we looked like the team that everybody had been watching for the last 2.5 months. And, you know, we just weren't able to get it done. Some great scoring chances in the first two periods. Their guy made some great saves. They weathered the storm. Obviously, in the situation we're in, we're probably going to have more pushback. And I'm sure they were feeling good after two periods. You know, I thought we had some chances to you know, pad a lead and have a lead, and we weren't able to do that. And, you know, obviously they get the second one, then the third one. And, you know, we haven't in this stretch here, we just weren't able to. And give them credit. They really did a great job locking things down. And, you know, it just the better team won the series. Let's just call a spade a spade. They were, you know, you play three games and they unfold the way they did. The best team won.
Well, I'm surprised to hear him say that. To say that the best team won versus the team that played the best won, because he doesn't clearly think, based on what happened during the regular season, based on what happened for those 2.5 months, that the Rangers weren't the better team. I think he thinks. Maybe I'm trying to read into what he's saying too much, but Chris, I mean, we know there is a massive difference between the better team winning and the team that played better winning. And I think the team that played better won the series. I'm not convinced that Carolina was definitively the better team in terms of matchups when the Rangers are able to beat them like they did during a regular season.
Carlin, I get what you're saying, but I guess to Coach Quinn's point, it's not how talented the collection of individuals that you have on the team are. It's how those players play with one another. You know what I'm saying? It's how they complement one another. It's the reports, the chemistry, all of those things factor into them being a better team. Like, I go back to 2007 when I played for the Dallas Cowboys and we had the New York Giants rolling into town on in the divisional round. That was a team that we had thumped twice in the regular season. And we didn't think that from a talent standpoint, they compared to us, but they were playing better than us. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The best players
yeah.
don't always make the best team, but the best team always wins. That's something that Bill Parcells used to always say. And in this series with the Rangers and the Hurricanes, I think it's applicable. Like, I think that's what Coach Quinn is talking about. Clearly, the interruption that they had from how they were playing when the shutdown took place to now, it did more in terms of affecting them as opposed to what we saw from Carolina. But that's what you would expect when you talk about a veteran team versus a young team, right? When you have a veteran team, when they have 4 months off, you know there's going to be the attention to detail, being able to hone your craft, being able to work on the little things that lend themselves to you being able to have success in the Stanley Cup playoffs. When you have a young team where a lot of guys that have never been there before, they don't necessarily know what the right approach is. They don't have the blueprint for success, especially once we get to postseason play. And I think this is where that showed up.
I think that when that's the case and you have such a young team, the immediate reaction for people afterward is to think, well, you know, we'll be better for this experience and all that. That's a tough one to take right out of the gate, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, as a player, you don't want to hear that. As a player, you have no time for that right now.
It's like, those a while guys before you're ever going to look at that.
Yeah, they're disgusted at themselves. I mean, you've had weeks in preparation for this restart, and it ends like this. You started it on Saturday, and it's over before midnight on Tuesday?
That's rough.
That's a rough one, man. That's hard to digest. So, I mean, the players don't want to hear that now. The reality is they will be better off for it, but they have to take all of those feelings that they have right now. They have to be able to process that, and they have to use that as fuel, put that chip on their shoulder going into the 2020-2021 season. Because that's not going to be that far around the corner. Like, we're not that far away from that.
No.
So just all of the stuff that you got right now, how you feel right now, use that as a springboard going into next year.
Here's Quinn on that very notion. Was it at least a good experience?
Yeah, as I sit here right now, Dan, I don't view this as a good experience in any way, shape, or form. And maybe when the dust settles and the emotions subside, you know, you look back at this season and over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks that we've been together and think, you know, okay, we continue to move forward as an organization, but that's certainly not how I feel today.
Yeah, exactly what you're talking about. And I look at it and I think it's a young team and I want to be able to think of it from that standpoint. I was just very disappointed with how they played throughout the entire series, considering I'm not going to sit here and portray myself as the biggest hockey guy in the world.
Sure.
But you can tell when a team is not playing to their capabilities and looks like a young team. That he just looked thoroughly inexperienced, and they are throughout the postseason or throughout these three games. That's what they looked like. And I was hoping to see them play better than this.
No, you were hoping for a better showing. I mean, it is a really talented team, right? There are a lot of things that Rangers fans can feel good about going into next season. It's just you wish that they would have been more competitive in the postseason against the team that they had success against in the regular season. Like, that's what you wanted to see. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Now, I'm sure that Coach Quinn, once he puts time and space between now and his preparations for the following year, he'll realize that there are some takeaways that he can use, some things that he can build on for his young club. And listen, you never like being ousted in the playoffs, but sometimes there's a necessary learning curve that you have to go through in order to have success at the highest levels. That's just what it is. Like, you're going to have some failures in the postseason before you break through as a team and you become that team that's consistently competing for the cup. And so you have to go through that. There is no way to shortcut that process. It doesn't feel good, but you talked about building that callus. That's a part of what builds that callus. And it's clear that Carolina, what they went through, the previous year. That was a part of what allowed them to be able to overwhelm the Rangers in this short series.
And you're right about one thing. I should not short sell Reimer, because Reimer was a huge part of that game yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, even when they had the flurry, and it's not like at that point you had, if memory serves, you had the big-time goal scorers, you still, on the ice, you still have those opportunities, and the guy still turns you away in an incredibly big spot in the game. And he was fantastic in the game yesterday and should not be shorted that credit. Now,
well, Ricky talks about it all the time, right? He says your confidence is going to go as far as the guy you got in between the pipes. And Mrazek did a great job in the first two games, and Reimer stepped in and did a great job in game three. So, I mean, Carolina was confident in their netminders, and that makes a difference. I mean, Quinn said that, you know, the goalie play didn't cost them this series, but there were some plays to be made in game two and then last night that their goaltenders just didn't come up with, whereas the Hurricanes' goaltenders did. And to me, that's one of those things that's huge in terms of momentum and game flow. And it's clear that the Rangers never really dictated the complexion of the game throughout this series. They played a lot better in the first two periods last night.
I mean, I thought the first period and a half. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, it's not what we saw from the Rangers at the end of the regular season. Would you agree on that?
Oh, absolutely. No, it's nowhere near what we saw. Yeah.
No.
And that's why, all right, you had a little bit of hope yesterday, especially in the first period, the way they were playing, that maybe they were going to be able to snap out of it a little bit. But that's why I go back to the tying goal, not even the go-ahead goal, because even though they were still playing all right in the second period, I feel like mentally that was just one of those moments that a younger team is going to have a lot more trouble getting over.
No, you're right. A younger team is going to have a tough time getting over those types of moments, right? And you heard Kreider say it after the game, and he talked about it. They didn't play their style of hockey, and they let Carolina kind of influence their approach to the game. Like, they wanted it to be, to use his words, blood sport, instead of going out there and playing the puck possession style that they normally do. Like, that when you hear guys saying that after the game, like, you know that Carolina dictated what the game was going to look like, and there was really nothing that the Rangers could do in order to change that. The guys that you were looking for to be able to change how the game was being played, to be able to put momentum in your favor, they just couldn't come up with those plays in the way that would be able to change the outcome of the game. So it's disappointing, but, I mean, there are lessons to be learned in this. Let's just hope that they learn those and they have something to build on moving forward.
We're going to hit the phones here early at 800-919-3776, so load them up now, Rangers. If you want to get into what happened with the end of this season, or if you're just wallowing, by all means, feel free to wallow. Chris, I when we switch to baseball here, I have to say I'm annoyed about something with the Mets. And what else is new? I mean, we always find something to be annoyed about. But I think there's a realization that people just have to come to sometimes when you keep waiting for somebody to turn the corner and go from a decent or an okay pitcher or player to that next level that you expect them to be. Not a superstar, but a very good one. Steven Matz, when are we all just going to admit that he's not that good? Steven Matz is an average pitcher. He is an average pitcher at best, and last night is a night where you see how the Mets' injuries with Syndergaard and with Stroman have really submarined their chances this year. You know, Cespedes is gone. You were kind of relying on him to be able to help this team be a much better offensive team, and that may have been a pipe dream to begin with, but when you put yourself in that kind of a hole and you're this team, you are not able to climb your way out of it more often than not. And, you know, for me, Matz is, he's okay. He's a fourth starter at best. He is not somebody that is going to go out there and give you a monster effort when you need it.
No, he didn't look the way that he did in his first two starts of the regular season. And you were hoping that Steven Matz would take that step forward, kind of like we saw Zach Wheeler last year, where he earned a $100 million contract with the Phillies over the offseason. But last night was a night you needed a big start from Matz, especially when you don't have Cano, McNeil, and Rosario in your lineup. Like, you knew that there was very little margin for error, and your starting pitching was going to have to give you as close to a quality start as possible. And that just didn't happen. He came up small in a big spot, right? He only went 3 innings. He gave up 7 hits and 5 earned runs. Like, that's not what you would expect. We've been criticizing the Mets' bullpen and their defense, but their starting pitching didn't give them a chance last night. The bullpen actually did good. What, the bullpen had 5 scoreless innings?
Yep. Yeah,
so, bullpen was fine. The bullpen did their job. Familia had a big out in the 5th with bases loaded jam. He got out of that one. But, I mean, listen, you needed Steven Matz to come through. He didn't come through. You saw Conforto, you know, with the 2-run shot, and then Alonso with the RBI base hit, try to mount a little bit of a comeback. But their offense was going to struggle a little bit because you were missing some significant pieces. And so when you have your offense not whole, when you have your lineup missing some big bats, and then ultimately your starting pitching fails you, where are the Mets going to turn? It's not like they have defense to fall back on.
No, they don't.
So, I mean, it was almost one of those games that was doomed from the start just by the way that Mats plays. And here's the thing. Mats had given up some runs early in his first couple of starts, but he found a way to be able to right himself. And last night you saw it get away from him, and that was the part that's a little unsettling if you're a Mets fan. I mean, me certainly watching it, I was just like, I felt like Steven Matz, you know, got past the huge blow-ups in early innings that had haunted him the past couple of years. I felt like in his first starts he was starting to turn that corner, but that's not where he's at right now. There's still some work to be done, and it's unfortunate because the Mets need that dude right now. He's got to pitch like a frontline starter, and based on what we saw yesterday, that's got to be in question moving forward.
Yeah, he's had good stretches, and I don't want to forget about that, but my problem with it is when it matters the most is when he's not, frankly, good enough. And, Chris, this is what I always come back to, okay? You know, last year, when the Mets were terrible in the first half, there were plenty of times where Mats just wasn't that good. Mm-hmm. But he's one of those classic guys that when the pressure is not on, like in the second half of the season last year, they're always going to perform better. And then you have your general manager and everybody else wanting to point to, well, look at how well we played in the second half last year. We're going to be able to carry that momentum over. They always talk about be careful about what you see in March and September. And for the Mets, it's be careful about what you see in March and then late July, August, and September. You know, because by that point, the season's over, and you're unable to.
What you're saying is just don't trust anything you see from the Mets. Just don't trust anything.
It's not just that, but Mats in particular has been a guy that I have just looked at, and everybody has always extolled how good he can be. The one thing I'll give him credit for is he has done a good job in showing the last 2 years that at least he has been able to get past most of the injury problems, and he can be durable and he can make 30 starts. Okay, that's a step, but like that's what Rick Porcello can do. He had one massive year and he'll be healthy for you, but he'll be a back end of the rotation guy. And, you know, it's really just where these injuries with the pitching have absolutely crushed him. Stroman especially. And I'm not even the biggest Stroman fan. I think Stroman's injury in particular really has made the difference here.
Yeah, I mean, you came in feeling like starting pitching was going to be the strength of this team, and that's just not the reality, right? You had Syndergaard go down with Tommy John surgery. Then you had Stroman with the calf injury. You know, Mats doesn't look right. We were nervous holding our breath with Jacob deGrom with the back a couple of weeks before the start of the regular season. I mean, you thought pitching would be a strength back in February, and that's just not what this team is going to be able to win with. They're going to have to win by being able to score a lot of runs. And going up against a team like the Washington Nationals that can hit, you know, you got to know that 3 runs is probably not going to get it done most nights. And for the Mets, I mean, it's just you're going to need Steven Matz to be more consistent. The problem is that you don't have a lot of time for him to figure it out. You've lost 6 of 7. Your team is 4-8. And we're a fifth of the way through the season. And I know it sounds crazy to say it because we're only 12 games in, but we knew that this was going to be a sprint, not a marathon. And so there's very little margin for error with the Mets based on how their roster composition, but also based on the length of the season. And so when you have nights like Steven Matz gave you last night where you don't have a chance, It's just frustrating because you can't afford to just give games away.
And naturally, just as we're about to start hitting the phones, my Zoom link went down. So I couldn't say, I'm in
Santiago. Is that what happened?
Like this second, like as soon as you heard Funky Cool Medina, my screen goes completely white.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Oh, Santi, what do we got? Let's go to Robert in Manhattan. Robert in Manhattan, you're up first on DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Carlin in for Dave. What's going on, dude?
Hello. Good morning, sir. Well, you're bright and bushy this wonderful day after the mini hurricane that really wasn't much except for the trees and the down pyre. Down.
I talked to a few people before you say it wasn't much.
Well, where I live, it wasn't much. But anyway, I hope you're well and safe considering these times. All right. My 2 cents. 4 months ago, the hockey gods played a nasty joke. Mr. Bettman and his cabal of geniuses decided, no. 16 teams isn't enough. We got to have 24. They should have had all 30. They should have invited the New York Knicks into the playoffs. Thank God they didn't do that. Neither did the NBA, for which I thank them. So they brought in teams that at the time the season was canceled were not in the playoffs. And don't tell me that, well, yeah, the Rangers were 1 point behind. They still weren't in the playoffs. They shouldn't have been. And last night, thank the hockey gods for getting rid of them. Go away. We'll see you next year, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, technically, it wasn't the playoffs. They were given the opportunity to play their way into the playoffs in this play-in round. That was
correct.
That was the whole thought process behind it. I mean, you have to give teams a chance when they are that close. You know, after 70 games, and they're within 2 points of Carolina, who is sixth, and the Rangers are 11th.
They had games in hand, by the way.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, look, I understand what you're talking about, but I don't want to ever take away the opportunity. This is why I think the NHL, Chris, really handled this thing beautifully in every way, not just from the virus standpoint, but also from the giving fair opportunities for teams to play their way into the playoffs. It's not just one game and out, but if you're right there and you're knocking on the door, you get a real chance at it.
Well, yeah, I like what the NHL did, and I'm a fan of what the NBA did as well. Like, we're going to complete the regular season in a bubble. The teams that are within striking distance get an opportunity to be a part of it, and the teams that aren't will try to put something together where you can have, you know, a little mini camp at some point in the offseason. But the reality is that, you know, you do have to give a fair chance to teams that are that close to see if they can work their way into the tournament. And so I don't have any problem with what the NHL did. I think Gary Bettman, in terms of the format, actually got this one right. Now, for a team that's trying to compete and actually has a chance to win the Stanley Cup, yeah, you're talking about more work. You got another round to go. You got five rounds as opposed to four. But, I mean, it's one of those things that everybody recognizes it's going to be a little bit different because we're in uncharted territories. This is an unprecedented circumstance, and you have to be able to be flexible.
And not just flexible, but smart. You know,
yes.
I think that the way they've done it, and I think the NBA's done it pretty well, too, because they didn't bring in ridiculous teams that had no shot at all, but they gave a chance to the teams that over the last 8-9 games of the year would have had a chance, and the NHL did the same thing. Jeff in Manhattan, next on 98.7 ESPN. Jeff, what do you got?
Good morning, fellas. I've been listening to sports radio for over 40 years, going back to Art Russ Jr. and others, and you guys really are the cream of the crop, the best of the business, and you're keeping us all focused and entertained through some tough times. So I wanted to thank you for that first.
Well, I'm going to say thank you on behalf of those other guys. And listen, let's face it. We're the real heroes.
Let me talk about the series with you. To me, it's an absolute talk about their inexperience. This is a team that beat Carolina 4-0 in the regular season. This is a team that won 9 straight road games that broke. I mean, that's a record in the New York Rangers history, which is a remarkable history of the New York Rangers. So to talk about the fact that they had some inexperienced players, to me, is a complete cop-out. The fact of the matter is...
they had 11 guys. 11 guys who had never been in the playoffs before. I don't know if that's a cop-out.
But Chris, think about it. Those are the same 11 guys that are part of this team that set that record, winning 9 games in a row on the road, and beat this team 4-0 in the season. To me, when you watch this series, look, I'm a Quinn fan. But the fact of the matter to me is... Carolina came completely prepared from the moment that puck dropped in game one. They beat the Rangers literally and figuratively to the punch, meaning they scored the first goal within a minute. Then Shea took out Fast with his with fisticuffs. They came to play. Brind'Amour had those guys ready to go. And the Rangers never recovered from the first minute of game one. They were on their heels the entire time. Yes, Reimer stood on his head for a little bit for part of that game yesterday, but there's no question that the Hurricanes came more prepared to play this series in the rain, and it showed.
I don't think anybody's disputing that. I guess our point is there's a difference between regular season play and postseason play. Like, the overall intensity, the speed of the game ratchets up. I don't care what sport you're talking about. Hockey is no different. And you absolutely saw that play out with this series against the Hurricanes. So you can't discount experience when you talk about playoff competition. You just can't.
I think that if you do that and you want to point to winning road games during the regular season as a comparable idea, then you're just not paying attention to what hockey playoffs have been about before. You know, we all know it's a different level of intensity. Now,
Chris, you're talking about being in a bubble and playing in the middle of a pandemic. That's another layer to this thing. That adds to the degree of difficulty. And you would think that a more veteran team would be able to handle that better than a young group. Am I wrong?
Oh, I don't think you're wrong, especially considering it's uncharted territory and it adds another level of stress to the situation that nobody's ever experienced before. Now,
nobody's trying to take anything away from Carolina.
No, absolutely not.
Get us wrong when we're trying to, you know, talk about what happened over this series. Carolina, you got to tip your cap to them. They went out there and they dominated the series. You know, they handed the Rangers their hats to them and said, thank you for coming out. God bless you. Good night. 3-game sweep. But, I mean, listen, there are some things that are there that can help to explain as to why Carolina was able to dominate the series the way that they did, knowing how talented the Rangers are. I don't think anybody coming into this series thought that Carolina was going to sweep the Rangers. Did you hear that? Because I didn't hear that.
No, absolutely not.
Everybody thought this was going to be a competitive series. And Rick actually liked the matchup for the Rangers. But the reality is, when you do have a veteran team that's been there before and done that, it does give them a little bit of an advantage. And it was clear that the Hurricanes exploited that advantage over the Rangers because they dictated the complexion of every single game.
Now, I'm not sure if it was Kreider or Zibanejad, but one of them did say after the game that the bad moments in game one, they let carry over.
It was Kreider.
Yeah, from the next couple of games. Yeah, so there you go. I mean, they let it carry over for the next couple of games. I mean, I think to admit that, now Kreider's obviously a veteran, so he understands. But to admit that tells you a lot about the situation. And for a veteran to say that means that it's particularly frustrating for him. And it wasn't all that long ago that Kreider was in the incredible minority as being that younger guy who was thrown into the playoffs, but he didn't have to be what these younger guys have to be now.
No, he's been around the block, right? This guy's experience. So he knows what he's talking about when he makes that statement. That is something that he was feeling in that locker room. That's something that he was feeling when he was on the ice competing. Like, they let that moment in game one where Foss got knocked out affect how they played the rest of the series. And you just can't do that. You have to find a way to be able to move past those moments and create some of those plays of your own that can intimidate and dictate to the other team. And that just didn't happen, or at least happen enough to where they were able to swing the series. It just didn't. And that's how you end up getting swept.
Let's hit Lou in Manalapan next. Lou, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, Carlin? How's it going, Canty? So I'm a huge New York Rangers fan. I'm also a huge New York sports fan. And the real issue I have with Ranger fans this morning and, you know, kind of the callers that you guys have been taking is the fact that, like, the Rangers are the most set up for the future. I'm a Mets fan. The Mets, you don't know what you're getting each night. The Jets, they traded Jamal Adams last week. The Knicks, what the heck's going on with the Knicks? You know, outside of the New York Yankees, who obviously, you know, ripped the ground up and rebuilt the farm and got superstar talent, I think the Rangers are the next team in New York to be successful. You brought in Panarin. That was one of the best signings in the team's history, maybe in New York sports history. You saw that this year. You have Mika Zibanejad. Yeah, Derek Brassard was a great Ranger. You got Zibanejad for basically nothing, and he's, you know, the future. You know, Chris Kreider, when he decides that he wants to put a puck in the net and be explosive, you can get a 40-point kind of guy. Hopefully you could get a 50-point guy next year. But the point is their farm system's loaded. Now they're eligible for a first overall pick. They have more than enough talent as far as youth goes than anyone else in the league. And, you know, although I was very upset last night and a lot of Ranger fans deserve to be, you know, the fact that David Quinn is a guy that came from college hockey, is a mentor to young athletes. You know, people that think that it's on him, you know, to get young players that never experienced something as harsh as the NHL playoffs. You know, the Hurricanes knew last year what it was like. They got to the conference finals. The Rangers didn't. They have 11 kids on that team that, and mind you, like maybe three of them that weren't even consistent starters on the team during the regular season. You got players that didn't know what to expect, and they're doing it in Toronto. So while you have the garden loud and roaring for these young kids on a nightly basis, Igor Shesterkin's never seen a situation like that.
I agree on all that. I think that you are going to be in the minority, though, if the day after the season ends the way it did, that you're able to look at it from a much bigger picture standpoint. I think it still has to sting a little bit, Chris.
Well, yeah, it has to sting. But here's the thing, right? It's just this was not the year that everybody thought the Rangers would be competing for the Stanley Cup.
It's no, not. No, so, but I once mean, you get there, made, you get that
if they
would have
made the playoffs, we would have counted it as a win.
Right, but
once they get into the playoffs, it's house money. Yep. But because of how things fell and you realized there was going to be a qualifying round and then you saw who your opponent was going to be in the Carolina Hurricanes, a team that you beat four times in the regular season, I think it put the expectation in a lot of fans that they were going to have a chance to advance to the next round. But when that didn't happen and when you get swept by the Canes, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But the silver lining to this is you got a lot of young guys that get playoff experience. And to the last caller's point, you have a 12.5% chance of having the number one overall pick by virtue of how the lottery fell. So, I mean, there's a chance that this young, talented team can get that much better with having a top draft pick. So you feel good about that. But, I mean, yeah, the day after you get swept, it's after you've been looking forward to this for months. Yeah, it doesn't feel good.
Islanders fans, listen up. Isles are back today at noon. 2-0 lead in their best of five qualifying round against the Florida Panthers. You can hear the game right here, 98.7 ESPN. For your chance to win an Islanders prize pack, text Islanders to 44202 right now. Again, that's Islanders to 44202. Brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill. 800-919-3776. We're hitting the calls hard. Got some open lines as well. So let's jump on board. Here's Paul in Brooklyn next on 98.7 ESPN. Paul.
Hey, Chris. Good morning. Just wanted to chime in about the Rangers and Kane series. I'm an Islander fan, but I think Rangers fans need to understand one important thing. The team lost its identity for the past two or three seasons. When Torts and Vigneault was there, the team had a strong identity. It was consistent, game in, game out, even in the playoffs, consistent. Now with the Rangers, one game you get dump and chase, next game you get a defensive game, next game you get the speedsters. Also, their head coach, you know, you have to know how to work with young guys and a young core and develop them. I don't think Quinn's the answer for the Rangers and that organization. I think Tortorella would be a great, great comeback coach for that team to have right now with their young core. And again, you've seen it over the past two or three seasons. Ranger fans, I mean, you guys have a great team. Hope for the best. But on that note, yes, yes, yes. My Islanders are going to sweep the Panthers today. Thanks, guys. God bless. Take care.
All right, first of all, Chris, I don't know that you want somebody who's trying to define the Rangers' identity when you're an Islander fan.
Yeah, I don't feel great about that. It feels like he was just hanging on the rim a little bit, just knowing that we had been ousted from the playoffs and that his team was on the verge of advancing via sweep of the Panthers. That didn't feel good.
No.
Now to some of the points that he was trying to make, I mean, he was talking about the consistency that the Rangers had under AV, and the reality is they were getting into the playoffs, but they weren't having the success that they were looking for as an organization. They wanted to be able to break through, and that just did not happen. For whatever reason, they underachieved. I know there were a lot of people that speculated that the team's identity was a little bit soft under AV, and so they wanted to go in a different direction. And you got to give credit to Coach Quinn and what he's built with this team. I mean, they've completely restarted this thing. I mean, Jeff, it wasn't that long ago that Jeff Gorton issued the letter and said that they're going to rebuild this thing. It wasn't that long ago. And the fact that we're at this point right now with the Rangers talking about how talented they are and surprised that they didn't advance past a team in the Carolina Hurricanes that had been in the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago, I think that's a little bit unfair in terms of how we're judging Coach Quinn.
It's 2 years ago, and barely. And for that turnaround to be what it has been that quickly has been remarkable. So I don't necessarily think you even look at what an identity is, because it hasn't really been established yet. You know, you're so early in the process, and you've gotten as far as you have. I think that's pretty impressive with what they've been able to do in such a short turnaround. The only other time you've ever seen a turnaround like this was with the Yankees in 2016 when they were able to make the deals that they did and get Gleyber Torres, but that was even faster. This has been more, you know, a case of you were at a certain level, you weren't getting to that next championship level. You got to the finals, for Pete's sake, under Torts. So when you're ready to look in the mirror, properly examine what you are, and then be honest about it with your fans and find yourself in this position 2 years later, I'm sorry, I think you have to feel great about that. And that's not about identity. You're just starting to establish what your identity is going to be.
Well, yeah, you're in the infancy stages of program building, right? Yep. But the one thing I will say about Coach Quinn, and listen, I'm a fan of Coach Quinn because he comes on the show regularly during hockey season, and I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point about, you know, what happened in the postseason. But I just, the messaging that we hear from him and what he talks about with his team, there is a consistency there. And so when you couple that with JD and having him in the front office now, I think Rangers fans should have a lot of confidence in the direction that this team is going in. I mean, you're seeing tangible signs of improvement, and you're hoping that as this thing continues to develop, that they'll get to a point where they're competing consistently to be in the Stanley Cup Finals. Because it's not just about getting to the playoffs. It's about winning a cup. That's what everybody wants. And so I think that the organization made the decisions a couple of years ago to shift gears because they realized what they were doing just wasn't good enough.
Let's hit Tony in Queens next. Tony, what's going on?
What's up, guys? First time caller, big fan of the show. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Henrik Lundqvist. You know, his time is pretty much done here in New York, and it's kind of sad. You know, like, he put the team on his back for so many years, those runs in 2014, 2015. And, you know, I think this year, like, you could tell that, you know, it's not really all there for him anymore. So I'm not too sure what they're going to do with him next year going forward. You got the expansion draft. I doubt the Rangers protect him. But if he doesn't move to the expansion team, or if he doesn't move to another team in the offseason, I don't think the Rangers are going to keep him. You got Shesterkin, who's great. Georgiev is really coming to his own. So, like, I wanted to hear your guys' opinion on, you know, what's next for Henrik Lundqvist if he's not going to be in a Rangers uniform. Thanks.
I don't think he's going to be, Chris. I mean, I think it's time to move on.
Well, he's not your future, right? Shesterkin is your future. I mean, you say it's time to move on. I don't know how that's going to play out this offseason. If I had to bet it, I would say that he probably starts next season on the Rangers roster and at some point is moved before the deadline. But I don't know, man. It's a tough spot for the organization because you know it's time. I mean, he's a legend, but you know that it's time for somebody to take over in between the pipes. It just is. And so I guess you have to be delicate in how you do it, but there is no easy way to part ways with the legend, man. Look what happened with the Giants and Eli Manning. That was about as subtle as a gunshot. So, I mean, it's hard to do it, right? You see it throughout sports. It's hard to move on from these iconic figures, but the Rangers are at that point now where it makes sense to move on from Henrik Lundqvist. We'll see how they do it, but if I had to bet it, I would say that he starts next season on the Rangers roster.
See, I think there's very tough conversations coming with him this offseason if they haven't had him already. And I don't see how he can be on the roster to start the season next year. We'll discuss more about it in a sec. And also, where does he rank in terms of the superstars who have never won championships here? I got a list of them, and I'm curious to get your take, Chris, as to where he's going to fit in on that list. 800-919-3776. Carlin in for Dave this week. Rick's power is out, unfortunately. What's he going to do to watch the Islander game? I mean, is he going to be sitting in his car watching on the phone?
Where there's a will, there's a way, Carlin. So I'm sure that he'll find something. He'll come up with something in order to watch his Isles.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. Listen, I love Dave. That's, you know, if you put a McNeely to your Tyson, that'd be a hell of a showing. I mean, 800-919-3776.
Oh, my gosh. Dave Rothenberg is a gift, man. He's a gift.
He is absolutely that. And yeah. He will be back next week. I'm in for him this week. It's Carlin along with Canty today. Rick's power is out. And I'm sure working
Carlin,
diligently.
Why the hell does DiPietro not have a generator? I was just thinking.
That's a great question. I mean, you know, Rick is living a life.
He's got
how
a
do you not have a generator?
State. It just, I don't. Why does he not have a generator?
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, the generator to me, listen, they're not cheap. The whole house generator is not cheap. But, you know, I mean, I think we can establish that you could probably swing it. So I even have one of those little wheel generators. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've got one that you could plug in the essentials to.
Sure. Yeah.
But that, you know, I mean, that to me is what you have to have for me. Got to plug in the fridge. Got to absolutely be able to plug in the fridge. And I guess, and at the same time, I got to be able to plug in to do the show.
If there was one thing that I had to know that you had to have power for in your house, it was your refrigerator. No question about it. Like, if that was a Family Feud question, that would be the number one answer. Things that Carlin has to have power for in his house. The fridge.
Exactly. The fridge, the television, the freezer.
There you go.
Those three right in a row.
There you go.
And then we'll get to the broadcast unit to do the show. We'll get to that later on. But
you got to have the generator, though. I mean, I lived through Hurricane Sandy, and I was with the Giants at that time, and I remember having to stay in my house because I was afraid that looters were going to come. And you're talking about staying in a 50-degree house in the dead of winter. It was just one of those situations where it was like, I'm not doing this again. I got to make sure I have a generator. Like, it's just one of those things. Like, if you live through that experience and not having power for an extended period of time, if you have the means, you absolutely got to get a generator.
How long were you without power for Sandy?
I want to say it was like a week and a half. And Tom Coughlin didn't care about us not having power. You were expected to get to work at 7:55 because if you got there at 8, you were late. Remember, all the clocks under Coughlin were 5 minutes fast.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
How much was that fine? if you showed up late?
I want to say it was like $500 per minute, and if you missed 5 minutes, then it counted as a missed meeting, and then it was like $10,000.
Oh.
Yeah, Coughlin didn't play those games.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah,
plays no games.
Well, the generator factor is just life-changing when you're able to get it, even if it's just, like I said, the smaller one. But we had it. We didn't have a generator. That was our first house back then. And I'm sitting in front of the fire for a week. And, that wasn't a good scene. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see me sitting right up front trying to warm my hands and, in essence, sleeping on the couch for a week. It's not good.
Yeah, that's not a good situation to be in.
No, definitely not. And hopefully for everybody that's listening and is dealing with the power issues right now, they're back much, much sooner than we had to deal with back then. 800-919-3776. Let's squeeze in a couple of more calls here. Here's Frank in New York. Frank, you're next, 98.7 ESPN. What do you got, bud?
I want to mention a point that I'm not sure if anyone else is making about Lundqvist, which is that he's going to be under contract next year for $5.5 million. He's got fully guaranteed eight and a half. He's got no trade clause, and it cannot leave him open for the extension draft. They have to protect him, so you can't just leave him out there. And then you can buy him out.
Yeah, you can buy him out.
You run out of buyout.
Frank, we got to let you go. You're breaking up too much on us. But look, this is where the tough conversation is. And it's already been discussed that they're going to have this conversation. But when you hear JD earlier in the year saying what he has said, we'll talk about it. We have chatted. We have had conversations already. That's what leads me to believe that they're going to buy him out this offseason. I think that's more likely than not. And it's not that, you're not applying any more pressure on Shesterkin by having him around or anything like that. To me, it's more just about respectful to Hank and what he has meant to the Rangers.
Just to give him the opportunity to have a clean start at the beginning of the season and pick the team that he actually wants to go to?
Yeah. If he still wants to play next year. And first of all, let's talk about this angle. Is Hank still a starting goalie in the league?
I think he's capable of being a starting goalie. I just think you have to have the right supporting cast around him, right?
You have to have a true opportunity to win, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's still a starting goalie.
See, I think it's borderline. And if they're going to buy me out of the contract, if I were Hank, I'd really think about retiring at this point. And I can't try to climb into the athlete's mentality, and I know that's not how athletes think, but I've never been in that situation before. But I would say if you are the level of player that he has been for his entire career, I think it's hard to go out sitting on the bench somewhere. I think I never want to be the guy that's hanging out at the party too long, Chris. You know, that doesn't know when it's over.
No, I got what you're saying, but here's the thing, though. You realize that when you stop, you're never going to be able to play that game competitively again on that stage. And that's a hard thing to walk away from. Most athletes are told that they can't play anymore. They don't make that decision on their own. You know what I mean? Like, you're told, like, the team or the league no longer wants your services. And that's a tough thing to come to grips with, but when you have the opportunity to continue to play at the highest level, which I'm sure he will be afforded to if he were to be on the open marketplace, I mean, that's a hard thing to walk away from. I get wanting to, have your career start and finish in the same place, but for most athletes, that's not the reality. That's not what happens. And so, I mean, if you're Hank and you still have that passion for the game, if you still have that desire, man, ride that thing till the wheels fall off. Like, that's just kind of how I approached it. That's what happened with my professional career. My career ended because of injury, not because I wanted it to. Like, I wasn't ready to walk away. My body told me I can't play anymore. You know, so, I mean, that's just That's one of those funny things, Carlin. You know, it just is what it is. But I don't know that there's an easy way for the Rangers to be able to deal with this, to be able to manage this. Either way, there are going to be people that are critical of the decision that's made with Hank.
All right. But, all right, let's say at least it's 95% of the time. You can tell me if I'm wrong on that number. 95% of the time for a professional athlete, it doesn't end on what they want their terms with it to be.
No question. You're absolutely
so
right.
So if that's the case, how do you weigh as an athlete wanting to end it on your terms versus riding it out too long? Because to me, if I want to end it on my terms, this is about as close as I'm going to get that for the rest of my career for Hank. You know, where do you, I know it's not the mentality of the athlete to ever tell yourself you're not capable of doing something anymore, but where do you find that balance if you're that player and you're at this juncture?
To me, I don't know that that balance exists. You know what I mean? I don't know if that athlete can come to that conclusion on their own. Like, that's with, like, family, close friends are involved and telling you, like, you know, this is what you need to do. This is what's in not only your best interest, but the best interest of your family. But, I mean, as an athlete, man, I mean, this is all you know. You've been doing this your entire life. This needs you for your entire life. You've been identified as special because you can do this at a level that very few people can. And to walk away from that, that's asking a lot. Like, that's asking a lot. Like, most athletes have to be pushed out of the door in one form or fashion, whether it's injury or whether you just don't have an opportunity because nobody wants you. It's very rare that you have somebody decide, you know what, I'm just going to stop playing. Now, you get the outlier guys that decide, you know what, I won a championship and it's about that time, I'll walk away, right? You saw that with Ray Lewis. You saw with Peyton Manning, even though he did it with the Denver Broncos. Like, very few guys have the opportunity to go out on top like that. Most of the time you're told by the team or you're told by your body, you can't do it anymore. And that's because a lot of guys want to try to do it as long as they possibly can. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I get it. And that's the true athlete mentality. So the fact that, don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming it here.
Yeah, sure.
But more often than not, the fact that they don't get to go out on their own terms is just something that is a product of that mentality being the case, that I'm not ready to walk away because I'm always mentally designed to compete at the highest level at every moment.
Yeah, you'll never be able to. You'll never be ready to walk away if you're an athlete. You'll never be ready. Like, it's just not, that's not how you're built. So you're not going to be ready for it, but, there becomes that point in time when you got to face the reality of your particular situation. And I guess the point that you're making with Hank is maybe it's about that time, because you think that he's a borderline starter right now, and that if you're not going to have a chance to compete at the highest levels as the guy that's the primary netminder, then why are you even doing it? Why would you even decide to go play somewhere else rather than just going out as, you know, an all-time great for the Rangers and an iconic figure in the New York sports landscape?
It's just, when I have the visions of that level of player, I think about Patrick Ewing in a Sonics uniform. You know, mm-hmm. I think about Willie Mays in a Mets uniform. You know, that
Carmelo Anthony in a Blazers uniform?
Well, I mean, let's pretend for a minute that he's on that level of player. And listen, I know he's his teammate. Dame Lillard, good for Melo hitting the shot yesterday.
Yeah, great.
For Melo hitting the shot.
That was a good moment for Mel, right?
It was a good moment. It was a good moment. Now, just don't get suckered in if you're the Knicks and sign him this offseason.
No.
We know it's possible. We know it's absolutely possible.
The Knicks are nowhere close to competing for a championship. At least the Blazers look like a team that's poised to get into the postseason, and Mel can be compliment to what you got with Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum. So out there, his role makes sense. With a team that's trying to rebuild from the ground up, I don't see the Knicks having any interest in bringing Carmelo Anthony back.
I hope not. But there are always those little whispers. My feeling is that those whispers are probably coming from Melo's side.
Sure.
But yeah, I hope that that's not the case. But yes, you're right. It was a nice moment yesterday for Melo. My heart was just so warm. I mean, I have never so accurately predicted exactly what would happen with an athlete as I did with Melo. And I don't want to pat myself on the back for it. But the second he got the contract from the Knicks, or even before that, it was so obvious that he was going to get the money and then at some point within a year or two force his way out because they weren't going to be winning anytime soon, primarily because of him.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. You wish that Carmelo could have, you know, had the kind of commitment to, you know, being the best that he could be then that he does now, right? You see him have the change with his diet, you know, his conditioning. His body looks completely different. I don't know if you see that,
looks skinny.
But his body looks completely different to me.
He does look very,
very
skinny.
It's just like the dedication that he's had just to have an opportunity to catch on and compete in the NBA. It's almost like, you know, it's something that he took for granted during his time with the Knicks versus now where he realizes he's got to do all the little things right just to have a chance. But we've always recognized that Carmelo Anthony has that skill set where he can score at will. And in the right situation, you know, he could be, you know, a high-level player. It just didn't feel like he took it as seriously as he should have when he was with the Knicks when he was in his prime. But good on him that he's having this renaissance in the twilight of his career. You know, I'm happy for him that he's able to have this moment and enjoy playing the game. He's got more playing days behind him than in front of him. So you just like to see athletes enjoy it on their way out the door.
All right, let's hit a call in here. Here's Dennis in Huntington next on 98.7 ESPN. Dennis, what do you got?
Hey, what's going on, Carlin? I know you got a quick happy trigger there, so please just let me make my baseball point before you dump me.
All right,
so
thanks
quickly
for the call, Dennis. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So, Rick, Canty, you should remember this. Rick has been bragging about this mega generator that he has that it can power his entire house and it can charge his Tesla at the same time. I don't know if you remember.
What the hell are we doing?
I don't know why. I think he's playing hooky. But I just wanted to ask Candy.
He's not a bad teammate. He's not Yoenis Cespedes. Like, he's not going to do that. Like Rico says, he's got no power. He's got no power. He can't do the show.
I'm not going to lie. Now I'm thinking about he just doesn't want to work with me.
You think it's personal?
It could be.
Wow. Don't take it personal.
I mean, he's a vindictive bastard, as we know. I mean, honestly.
Shots fired.
Every time I watch one of these Yankee games and they win in dramatic fashion and everything, I'm all pumped up. But then it starts to seep into me, like, is this season even going to finish? Like, is this all for nothing? Like, do you have that same feeling I'm getting, like this bittersweet feeling?
You know, I do worry about it, but I just feel like there's too much at stake for the owners and for the players for them not to finish the season. Like, I feel like they will find a way. And because they do have these alternative training sites where they've got, you know, these guys from their farm systems, they've got up to 30 players in these sites. And, you know, because they have that in place, because MLB has come to the conclusion that they're going to keep rosters at 28 players with the big league clubs, I do think they'll finish. Now, they might not have every single team play 60 games, but I do think we'll finish the season and then we'll have a playoffs.
I have never felt better about that than I do right now. And I know that might sound bizarre because of what we've seen with the Marlins and with the Cardinals. But Chris, I honestly believe because of what we've seen with the Marlins and the Cardinals, that a lot of these players needed to see what the outcome is and how their lone actions can affect an entire team. And not just because they're going to be knocked out, but because that paycheck could go away if you're not playing games. And that's honestly what, you know, it's like the NFL where 50% of these guys are making $1 million or less for the entire year, which means they're making a third of that. They need every penny that they can get here. And you have to start making those right decisions if you want this to finish. I actually think this happening, assuming that nobody really gets violently ill or, you know, God forbid anything worse, I actually don't think it was a bad thing for a wake-up call for this for the league.
No, that's what Derek Jeter said in his statement yesterday. And so you hope that everybody around baseball is paying attention and everybody around sports for that matter. The one thing I will say is that I think baseball is trying to take more steps in the right direction by putting a compliance officer on every big league club to make sure that these teams are following the protocols. That's important. I don't know why the hell they didn't start out with that approach, but it's something that's clearly necessary because it didn't feel like you could trust all of the players coming into this situation. You're talking about 700-800 plus guys. So, I mean, you're going to have a couple of guys in there that aren't going to do the right things, and you have to have the policies enforced in order to keep everybody safe and protect the integrity of the season. But I just feel like moving forward, because the Marlins and the Cardinals outbreak didn't stop the season, I just feel like both sides, the owners and the players, are committed to seeing this thing through to the end. So, yeah, I don't watch the baseball games worrying that a shutdown is imminent. I just don't. I enjoy them for what it is.
And I think that you are seeing, and I know it's early to say this, but what you spoke of earlier about the Rangers and taking this experience and learning from it and, you know, kind of holding it in, mm-hmm. I think you are seeing that with the Yankees so far this season from game six last year. And I know that's early to say something like that.
No, why are you saying it's early to say something like that?
Well,
Aaron Judge talked about it.
I know.
He talked about it. He said after game six, he told the guys in the clubhouse, remember this feeling.
Yep.
Use this as fuel for 2020. That's what he said. So it's not early for you to mention that.
Well, but my point is, it being early to mention it is more about like, all right, does it really mean anything until the postseason? Okay. But they are playing with that level of edge and intensity that he would want them to based on those comments.
Carla, let me ask you a serious question because I know there are a few teams out there record-wise that are around where the Yankees are at. But is there anybody better than the Yankees right now, like playing better baseball than the Yankees?
Not playing better baseball than the Yankees right now.
No.
I mean,
you want to have the conversation about are the Dodgers a better team than the Yankees talent-wise, okay, I guess that would be legitimate. But, I mean, you're not putting the Cubs in
no.
the Twins.
No. There's
not
one
even
other team.
Not even the
Braves
are on the same level as the Yankees. Like, they're just not.
No. No. There's one team in that discussion, and it's the Dodgers. But I look at the Yankees, and I other than small concerns with the rotation that, you know, Paxton is going to actually end up getting to where he needs to get to this year, all of that, I don't look at anybody else and think they're in the same league.
Yeah, Paxton is probably my biggest concern as a Yankees fan. Far number two would be Gary Sanchez because he looks lost at the plate.
Yeah.
But after those two guys, my third concern is health. That's it.
Yeah. And Sanchez wouldn't even worry me that much right now, considering the Yankees can have, and Sanchez worries me just from the standpoint that he can go in a slump for a month and a half. But when guys go into slumps, there's always going to be somebody hitting in that lineup. There's always going to be somebody hitting in that lineup. And that's going to more than make up for it. So
Yep. But then the other thing where you say you have to look at the glass half full with Sanchez is that Gerrit Cole talked about
him.
How great of a game he called the other night.
Yep. Loves him. Yeah.
When's the last time we heard a pitcher talking about how Sanchez called a great game?
Yeah. And look, we could talk about the, you know, the framing and all that stuff with how he's down on one knee and all that now. If Cole is saying that about Sanchez, everybody else has to pay attention to that in that staff.
Well, yeah, you know? Because we've been missing that dominant ace in the postseason. Now, I know Tanaka's gone out there and pitched great in the postseason. He's one of those guys that you trust. But, I mean, we haven't had a pitcher like Gerrit Cole. We paid him $324 million for a reason. We felt like that was necessary in order to get over the hump. And when that guy says, yeah, he feels great about throwing to Gary Sanchez, even if Gary Sanchez isn't hitting, you like the fact that he's behind the dish just because the best pitcher on the staff feels comfortable throwing him the baseball.
11:26.
Maybe that's just me.
No, it's not just you. I took very, very, I paid very close attention to that the other night. As you would notice by, you know, listening to Savages in the Box, which is a Yankee podcast, by the way, available Monday through Friday. Although I didn't even do one today because I couldn't even tell you who the pitchers were. They didn't even lay that out there.
It
yeah,
just feels
exactly.
Like this, exactly. Everything's up in the air, man. It's 2020. What else you need to say? It's 2020.
I'm so tired of hearing that too. No offense. I'm so tired. I have a shirt that says 2020 sucks. And I can't tell you how many people, if I go to the supermarket, just point at me. I mean, no joke. At least 20 people will say something if I go to the supermarket wearing that shirt. At least.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
All right. 1127. More calls coming up. I got time for it at 800-919-3776. I do want to get to the other superstars who have not won championships and where Henrik Lundqvist would rank on that list. But also, there is a college football team in the FBS that has decided not to play this year, the very first one to do it, and it's one in the area we'll discuss next. It's Carlin in for Dave Rothenberg. Rick's, I mean, he says, and I use air quotes when I say that, I'm out of power, but apparently a full house generator that I wasn't aware of. So I'm just assuming he wanted no part of this for 2 hours. Yeah, let me take the day off. You know what? That power's not working. Yeah. All kinds of problems. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. So. John in Massapequa, let's get him in because he's been waiting a bit on Mello. John, what's going on?
Fellas, how you doing? Chris, what's up? I just wanted to make sure I didn't misunderstand you earlier. Like, were you saying that Melo forced his way out of New York?
Yeah.
But that's not true. Phil Jackson forced him out of New York.
Phil No. I mean, listen, I think Phil played a role in that because Phil never wanted to bring him back, which if people would actually look at it objectively, might have been one of the smartest takes that Phil had while he was here besides drafting Porzingis. Again, the Knicks were not – but the Melo was back because of James Dolan, and they were never going to let him go, and they had made the trade to go get him, and Dolan had stepped in to make sure that they made the trade to go get him. But Melo didn't want to be here anymore either. That was more important, and that was – the crux of it, because it's not just Melo, to be fair. It's life in the NBA. You get the contract now, and you get to determine whether or not you want to play there if you're unhappy within a couple of years.
100%. 100% right about that. But in my opinion, Phil Jackson was the driving force behind Melo leaving, because honestly, in my opinion, Carmelo was the only superstar that I've, in my lifetime, that I've ever even really wanted, he really wanted to be here. You know, like, everyone else, they talk about the Knicks when we're playing them, like, oh, yeah, it's nice to play at the Garden, but they don't ever want to take on the challenge. Melo took on that challenge, and he was forced out by
He wasn't. Melo was not. John, saying that he was forced out, thanks for the call, I think is misrepresenting the situation. I don't think Melo was forced out. I think it was Melo wanting out. It was Phil Jackson never wanting him back to begin with. And I don't think that Phil was necessarily wrong with that.
Let's just call it what it is, right? The Knicks have been a dysfunctional organization for the better part of the last decade, and the two faces of that are Carmelo Anthony and Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
And so Mel, after he was being scapegoated by the organization and by a segment of the fan base, you know, he probably soured on things, and he probably wanted a fresh start elsewhere, which is why he moved on. And, you know, while Carmelo was here, the Knicks were never going to be able to properly rebuild. So it just made sense for both sides to part company and try to get back on the right track. And that's why I'm saying it's good for Carmelo to have that moment down there at the NBA bubble with the Blazers now, being able to be kind of like that guy that can be a sniper from deep in clutch situations like you saw against the Rockets last night, but not be somebody that has to shoulder the burden of the entire team. Like, that's where he's at in his career. So that's a good spot for him. I just don't think him being with the New York Knicks right now as they're trying to rebuild is the right move to make. So I know there have been some rumors, some grumblings about that. That does not need to happen.
Mm-mm. Absolutely not. Yeah. Now that his name has come up in this context, I'm going to throw some names at you, and I'm curious where Lundqvist would rank among these New York athletes to never win a championship for you. Okay?
All right.
And you know, for, like, all right, Melo, would you call Melo a superstar in the NBA at one point?
Yeah, Mel was a superstar.
For how long?
I mean, listen, there were a couple of years in there where Carmelo Anthony, you could argue, was the best scorer in the NBA.
All right, I'll give you that. And I shouldn't say I'll give you that. I think that's accurate. There were probably 3 years where Melo was a superstar. Okay.
Yeah, he got a scoring title, right, earlier this decade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so I'll put him on that level.
Okay.
Where does Lundqvist, and for that matter, Melo, fit in this list? Mike Piazza, Don Mattingly, Curtis Martin. I'll put David Wright on that level.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Ewing, Joe Klecko. It's tough, right?
Yeah, that's a tough list. I mean, if I'm trying to call it like I see it, I think Mel would be up there. I think Mel would be up there. I would probably put Ewing at the top of that list.
Yep. Then I would definitely put him first.
Yeah, I would put Ewing at the top of that list. Then you're probably talking about a coin flip with Hank and Piazza.
Hmm.
And then you're probably talking about the rest of those guys being grouped in there in that conversation for number three.
And as Ray Dinahan points out, you've got a current one that could be on the list for the moment, but these are all guys that are retired at the, you know, who have gone on.
Yeah.
But the current one would be DeGrom.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I think DeGrom could end up being number one on that list overall. And obviously you don't want him to be.
Yeah. You know what? DeGrom could be number one based on his production, how he plays. But in terms of overall star power, I don't know about that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So,
because there's a difference between best player versus star power. There's a difference.
So DeGrom's personality would hold him back on that front?
Yeah, I think so. The fact that he doesn't play every single game, that, you know, he's every fifth day, you know what I mean? Like, that, those things factor into the conversation.
Yeah, but if he wins, and listen, take what you will for this
he's
year.
He's the best pitcher in baseball. Like, yeah, he's got a chance to win a third straight Cy Young.
Yeah.
How many pitchers can make that claim? Not a lot. So,
no.
Like, he's special. But I mean, and I'm just asking. I mean, when you start talking about iconic New York sports figures,
mm-hmm.
is Jacob DeGrom popping in your head?
No, because of what you're saying.
Yeah.
And he's still here. I think that's part of it, too. We think about guys who have gone on to pass. But
sure.
For me, I think it's absolutely Ewing number one.
Mm-hmm.
I would put Mattingly and Piazza in front of Lundqvist. I'd probably put, and this will sound strange because this guy did not have that personality that you're talking about, but man, is he still in my eyes a remarkably underrated player, Curtis Martin.
Yeah.
Curtis Martin was a tremendous. Yeah.
I'm with you on that one. But he's not a name that jumps out at you in terms of iconic New York sports figure.
Because he doesn't, you're right about that. He doesn't have that, out on the town personality,
he's a Hall of Famer. He's a great player. Yep. He's a great player.
The other guy that I think should be up there, and this, people will look at it and say, how? Because he's not even a Hall of Famer, but he should be a Hall of Famer. I mean, Joe Klecko was all pro at three positions on the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was an unbelievable player that was part of a great group, but he was the best player of the sack exchange back in the 80s. But anyway, that aside, but I think about Wright as, here's the thing, Chris, like I think about David Wright in terms of New York stars, but I don't necessarily think he's on that level of player. If that, you know, production, he had a really good career for a while and it should have been much longer as we know.
The injuries is what keeps him from being there.
Right.
I think you're absolutely right. The injury is what kept him from getting to that point where he's in this particular conversation.
And Mattingly was a superstar who had a back injury that, you know, just really broke him down the last few years of his career. And even still had those bright moments. And when he did, it became something special. But a guy that should be in the Hall of Fame, not based on what he did, but based on the fact that he should have had a couple of more years of being dominant, if not for the injury. And it was a back injury, so it was a gradual thing as opposed to a guy like Kirby Puckett, which was an injury and then boom, that was it.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And so you say all that to say that Carmelo Anthony would be last on your list if you're ranking all of these New York sports icons.
Well, let me go look at this list. Yes, dead last.
You are a savage. Not only do you podcast with savages in the box, but you are a savage.
There is a list of eight people here. Yeah, there is a list of eight people here, and I would put him eighth.
Wow. Okay, there it is.
Chris, I wanted to get this in. And UConn becomes the first school in the FBS to officially suspend their 2020 season. And it looks like for football, and it looks like they're not going to they're playing as an independent this year and already had four of their games canceled because they're a non-conference opponent. But, you know, they put out the statement after checking with doctors and such like that. We've made this decision. Also had a statement from the players as well, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, well, I think they're taking a practical approach to this year. I mean, the reality is there's so much up in the air for these colleges and universities. And to try to play sports in the middle of a pandemic without having the resources that these professional sports teams do, I just think it was going to be hard to secure the health and well-being of the players. And so, yeah, I don't think UConn is going to be the only FBS team to cancel their football season. I just don't. I know these conferences are going to conference-only schedules, but they're being optimistic. And I think that at some point we're going to be faced with the reality that they're not going to be able to have the college football season this fall.
It's going to be very difficult to do.
Yeah.
The thing I would say about it, though, is it's easier for UConn to do it being a team that's playing as an independent,
sure,
had four of those games canceled, and two others were in jeopardy with Virginia and North Carolina, and they don't have big-time TV money that they are losing out on.
Yeah, and I get all of that, but I mean, what it comes to is these are not professional athletes. This is amateurism.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, if you can't keep the kids absolutely safe, then there's no reason to have them out there. And there's so many unknowns with this. And to ask a teenager or a young 20-something to be able to make a decision about his health, both in the short term and the long term, when they can't completely appreciate the gravity of the situation, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't think they should play college football this year. And I think at some point they're going to face that reality. I mean, it's already on the fence for the University of Michigan, and we know where their school president is at with everything and his background as an epidemiologist. Yep. Like, it just feels like it's going to be tough to pull off. The Ivy League already said we're not doing it. It's not happening. Now, the Ivy League, there aren't huge television contracts, so that made it a simpler decision for them. But they were the ones that were ahead of the curve in terms of canceling their conference basketball tournament back in March. Remember that?
Yep.
That was absolutely the Ivy League that did it first, and then you saw a domino effect. You saw all the other conferences decide to do it as well. So even though some of the bigger conferences like the SEC, the Big 12, the ACC, they might be late to the party, I think they're all going to be forced to eventually face the fact that we're not going to be able to have a college football season because you just can't justify putting those kids at risk. You can't.
And today, like we saw over the weekend with players from the Pac-12, players from the Big Ten put out a letter in the Players Tribune. It was mostly dealing with, and I just took a cursory glance, all of the health concerns around COVID-19. Sure. I don't believe, I'm not positive, again, I haven't read the whole thing, that it was on the revenue split as well.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.